Go Wild is a free social community created for and by hunters. This means that unlike mainstream social media, your trophy pictures won't be censored. They're encouraged. As you spend time on Go Wild, you will earn awesome rewards such as gift cards, free swag, and big discounts on brands like Garmin and Vortex. You will even earn $10 just for signing up. Visit downloadgowild.com and sign up today.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the O2 Podcast. Tonight, you got Andrew here to talk to you about the Ohio outdoors. I'm going to be honest with you right now. We're going to do a really quick intro. Paul is traveling. Imagine that. Doing important turkey stuff. And I'm a bit worn out. I've been up since, 3:30 this morning. Just got back from my hunt at Killdeer Plains, and next week we are going to give you guys all the details on that. Spoiler alert, no turkey came home with me, at least nothing that I got out of the woods. So, but it was really cool, and like I said, we'll get you more info of that. Paul will have a couple hunts to talk about on that end, but today we will just go through some of the updates here real quick and then get you into our show. First of all, I want to say thank you to our friends at Go Wild. It's your online platform for everything hunting, posting pictures, connecting with people, all kinds of stuff like that. Got your shopping aspect on there, lots of good deals. I think you get $10 just for joining. So, really the place to be if you're into the hunting world, and especially if you're sick of the rest of the social media like I am. And just to remind you, they've got Send It Slam coming up this July 9th down in Louisville. If you go to their website, timetogowild.com, you can get all the details there. But we're talking outdoor festival, 3D archery competition, full lineup of local Kentucky musicians, food trucks, breweries, lots of stuff for the kiddos to do. So if you're looking for a quick trip down 71, go take the family for a day or two, Louisville. It's almost like a staycation, and you get to mix in your outdoor interests. Pretty cool. So yes, Go Wild. Timetogowild.com is the website. If you don't have the app, get it. Also want to say thank you to our friends over at Tethered. And for partnering with us, we're working with them. We'll get you some content here soon on that. We'll get Paul's big gorilla body up there in the saddle and get some video of that for you. It'll be fun. I was told Paul's brother let me in on a little secret that they like to refer to him as Neanderthal. He will hate me for saying that. But so there you go. We'll get Neanderthal up there in the saddle. Thanks to the guys over at Tethered. But seriously, now's the time to start thinking about that. You want to get out in the woods and get comfortable with all that kind of stuff if that's something you're going to do. And I suggest it highly. It's extremely comfortable, lightweight, mobile. It gives you a lot of advantages. And I can't say I hunted exclusively from it last year, just from some of the places I was at. But I spent 90%+ of my time up in it. Loved every second. So, let's see. I think that's tetherednation.com. Let me just get you the official website. Yes, tetherednation.com. So, if you want to get on there and find out more information, all over Instagram. They're on Go Wild. Good people there. So, First Light is another one that we're working with. And I just want to give them a quick shout out, because I was in a lot of my First Light, everything I wore was First Light for my turkey hunt this past weekend, and man, that was amazing. The concealment was great, the comfort was great. We started with some cold mornings, got to the warmer afternoons, and as the week went on, I got warmer. The layers worked, man, and that was one thing I was not worried about. And historically, it seems like there's always something clothes-wise that you're fooling with, but or I have, that was definitely something that was not of a concern. So big shout out to those guys for all of your technical apparel. But it's more than just that. You'll want to wear it all the time. So, news around the state real quick. We've got turkey season ending May 22nd in the South Zone. We've got ending in May 29th in the North Zone. So those few counties there up in the northeast part of the state. That's something definitely to realize, that this will be one of the last times you're hunting for a while until the doves come in there in the fall. But take advantage. The weather looks like it's breaking. If you got a second, get out there. Make sure you're spraying down for your ticks. That was something this past week, and I'll tell you, zero ticks. Use my permethrin spray. Totally on board with that. It's huge, huge for preventing any ticks. And I was hunting with Brian Hall. Sorry, Brian. So shout out to him for being drug along with me on that trip. But he was hitting the DEET pretty hard, and also no reports of ticks there. And God knows they were out there in the tall grass and everything that we were walking through. So we've got the archery hike coming up here, and this is going to be July 15th through 17th down in Hocking Hills. The website is archeryhike.com, and that is going to be a 3D shoot hiking event. There's 1 day, 2 day, 3 day passes all out there. But get on that website, got all your details to check that one. So maybe if you can't get the Send It Slam, but you want to get the knock the rust off your archery skills, that would be a great way to do it. Let's see, what else do we have around the state? I know I saw some turkey numbers released, harvest numbers released here recently, and I'm not gonna lie, they weren't great when it comes to, you know, talking about populations and different things. I think we were at about, our 3 year running average was like 9,000 and change, and I think up into this point we were at about 7,000. So is it a population issue? Is it a hunter issue? I don't know. I know they're out there. The birds are out there, so just got to find them. But that's one thing to keep an eye on. Let's see, what else do we have? I don't have a whole lot of other stuff around the state at this point. I want to get into our talk here. First out, shout out to FUDmaster for the review on Apple Podcast. So thank you, FUDmaster. Appreciate that. But today's talk, we are talking archery. We are going to start into that idea, because just like your saddle setup, now is a great time when the weather breaks to get out and start tuning the bow back up. If you haven't been on it, we've got some of these 3D shoots coming up this summer that you want to be pretty sharp for. But also, you know, it's a great thing to do with your family, kids, and just to be outside relatively, and not super high impact, right? You got enough mulch to move and different things to do in the yard. This is just nice, relaxing archery, right? So Paul and I took a quick road trip down the road to Florence, Kentucky. So just south of Cincinnati down there. And we met with the guys at Serious Archery. So if you've not ever looked into Serious Archery, these guys make the top-notch arrows, and they are one of the companies out there that, it's not heavy arrows or nothing. But they do have those options, right? And you've got the ability to customize your arrows for whatever you need, and these guys are awesome. I cannot say enough great things about the hospitality and the time that they gave us. This is getting into a busy time of the year for them. They've got new things coming out. They're traveling a lot. They have a sweet YouTube channel. You should look it up, where they're out hunting iguanas off of boats in Florida and snakes. And they're, I don't know if it's snakes, but javelinas and different things over in Texas. catching snakes with our buddy Troy, the Ranch Fairy. But these guys, they're legit, and they know their arrows. They're super technical as far as how, you know, how accurate they're getting to their the spin and the weight and everything. It's incredible. But they took the time to sit down with us and talk, show us around their operation, and got to learn a lot about them. Their website is seriousarchery.com. And if you guys want to get on there, check it out, man. This is one of those companies that offers kind of your test packet. So if you're not sure if you want to go head first into the heavy arrow setup or, you know, these high-end custom arrows, get a couple of them, you know, and just screw around with it. See what you think. They offer the Tough Head broadheads. They do have the Ranch Fairy Easy Button, I think is what they call it. And they've come out with a couple new kind of innovative things as far as inserts go and whatnot. And Seth will talk a little bit about that on the podcast. But this is a good place to start if you guys are looking for a new arrow setup. So seriousarchery.com. They are over Instagram and YouTube as well. And they're pretty local. Okay. We're not talking about buying stuff from around the world. It's local. But anywho, we will get into that. I'll let them do the talking. And just so you know, remember, follow us on Go Wild, O2 Podcast. Our Instagram is the.o2.podcast. And then the website is the02podcast.com. So we appreciate all of you very, very much. And reviews, the downloads, the show's growing. We're trying to keep doing big things for you guys in our free time. And, we really appreciate everything that you guys are doing. So take care. Have a good week. Please go out and enjoy that weather. And if you get a chance, get out the turkey woods or get some fishing going. Get those kiddos out there, too, because this is the time to start getting introduced to everything and keep it going. So, all right. Appreciate you guys. Have a great week. Take care. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the O2 Podcast. Today, Paul and I, we're on the O2 Roadshow. Our first, maybe our second roadshow show. But we're down here with Seth and Tyler from Sirius Archery Products. Hey, guys. What's going on?
Hey. How's thanks for having us.
Hey, no problem. Thank you for having us down here to see your shop and see the operation. It's quite the operation.
It is. It's been very, very interesting.
So I've personally got introduced to Sirius, 6 or 7, 8 months ago, watching our buddy Troy Fowler, the Ranch Fairy, and some of his YouTube videos and whatnot. But we figured out these guys were pretty close and we could come down here, and Seth has been a gracious host to give us a background on the whole company. So Seth, do you want to tell us a little bit about how you got started in this? I mean, did you just wake up one day and say, I'm going to start an arrow company, or?
That's exactly what happened, I thought. Ever since I was a little kid, I thought, one day I'll own an arrow company. But no, I had been shooting Sirius arrows from the previous owners, and the previous owners was Tim Thacker and Andy Dutton, and they were just awesome salt-of-the-earth guys. Tim's one heck of an entrepreneur. He's had a lot of businesses. And Andy is an aerospace engineer with GE. And so as the company started to grow, they were feeling some of the growing pains of just being pulled in different directions with their other lives. And so it was right when COVID hit, and we had a trip planned up to Canada. Yeah, it was up in Manitoba. And we thought the border was going to open. We were all excited. The border was going to open. And I called Sirius and said, hey, I need a few more insurance arrows, and I'd like to have a few extra go on the trip. Can you rush me out some? And Tim answered the phone and said, yeah, absolutely, we'll get them out to you. And the next day, we found out they weren't going to open the border. So after that, I called him back and said, hey, don't worry about it. I don't need them so fast now. Just go ahead and send them whenever you can. And Tim said, hey, we just had two people back out on our trip to Maine. Do you want to fill those two spots? And ironically enough, it was Jason Wojciechowicz, who owned Tough Head, and I were going to Canada. And then Tim and graciously invite us along. We go up there, and after about 2.5 days of hunting, Tim said, "I'm so busy. He killed his bear. I got to get back." So he drove 20 hours up to Maine to then turn around and come right back. And I just felt God call me on the way home to ask him if he was interested in selling, because I'd had some other companies and sold them, thought I'd be retired for good. A month later, I was bored out of my skull, and I was back in the corporate world again. And when COVID hit, I realized just how much I didn't like being on an airplane. And so negotiations back and forth, and I owned an aero company. And then after that, I thought it was going to be kind of a lifestyle business where I could fulfill 10 or 15 orders in the morning and then go hunting or fishing in the afternoon. And 3 months later, we had 7 employees, and it's just grown from there. So it was it's a lifestyle business now, and that it's my entire lifestyle. So
that's
how we got to where we are now, and it's been a good ride. It's growing by leaps and bounds, more than I had ever expected it to. But it's really a testament to what Tim and to what Andy put in place in the very beginning. Extremely good products. The way that we lay our carbon is a testament to Andy, the resins we use, and then the marketing that was done that Tim did before I opened the company, or before I bought the company. And it's awesome. Those guys are awesome.
That's awesome. And yeah, it never hurts to have like an aeronautical engineer on your design team. Is that what it would be?
Right. Yeah. Right? He's from the aerospace side. Yeah. So he's pretty brilliant.
Very, very good when it comes to flying arrows. And the tough head side of things, that's your broadhead line. Now, did you acquired that as well, or is it still two separate companies? How does that work?
Yeah, so we purchased Sirius in July of 2020. And then Jason and I had been friends that owned Jason Wojciechowicz. He owned Toughhead. And in 2021, his other business was blowing up, and we had an opportunity to acquire Toughhead then, and we rolled it in with Sirius. And so we operate out of the one facility here in Kentucky.
Gotcha. Very cool. So, well, we're going to talk a little bit about arrow basics and designing arrows and, you know, some of the stuff that goes into your guys' products as far as, you know, what you're trying to build. And we were just talking about it before we started recording. But when I bought my first bow, and I went to the large box store, and I picked out the one that had everything I needed. But then it was like, oh, yeah, you're going to need arrows. And it wasn't something that, it was kind of an afterthought. Well, I'll take 6 or 12 of those, you know, whatever the ones the guy at the large box store recommended. Never thought twice of it. I went shot, you know, and I had my ups and downs with that set. Our listeners might or might not, but I went away from the upright compound. I went to a crossbow. I had a good success with there. It wasn't until last year where I started hearing about this kind of heavy arrow idea, and that there was a lot more to the arrows than just whatever the guy at the store recommended. And so there is a lot to building arrows, and you've shown us that today from the spin testing, the different weights, the precision. Holy smokes, the precision you guys have on this stuff is unbelievable. But I guess my overall thought and question is that something that I was just missing, or has that always been there? I mean, is this idea of really building arrows for maximum penetration and performance, is that something that the industry's seen grow here in the last few years?
Yeah, I think we've seen this migration away from the big box stores. Not totally. They're still there, right? They still sell a lot of arrows. But when you're looking at trying to maximize penetration, increase your FOC, which we'll talk about, getting better downrange performance, it's similar to being able to go and buy some really inexpensive ammunition. Well, there's no such thing as inexpensive ammunition
right,
anymore.
Right.
But you used to be able to buy inexpensive ammunition, or you could buy premium ammunition. Both got the job done in the right circumstances. And that's where we are now. Will big box store arrows kill deer? They absolutely will. But what we bring to the table is a lot of customer service, because there's a lot of people that just don't understand even what a high FOC arrow looks like, how to build it. What happens then is they're trying to cobble stuff together on their own. They try to do it at the big box store. They get frustrated. there's a lot of people that just don't have accurate arrows, and it's not necessarily because of them. It's because they were sold that they need to have this ultra-fast 310 foot per second arrow, and they have these little 2-inch fletchings on the back, which isn't enough to throw an adult broadhead downrange, and it can't be controlled, and then they get frustrated and give up. So I don't know how many archers we've actually lost to attrition just because they gave up. They couldn't become accurate. It was frustrating, and a lot of it is they just weren't in the right arrows. And so I think we're trying to turn a tide with that. You know, obviously Troy Fowler with the Ranch Fairy, he does a great job. Dr. Ashby and the Ashby Bow Foundation, they're doing a phenomenal job. But it's not all just about heavy arrows. It's we're trying to get you in the right arrow for what you're going to be hunting. If you're going to hunt, like we talked earlier, a hippopotamus, that's probably a 1,100 or 1,200 grain arrow. That's not something you're going to be able to even purchase at Cabela's or one of the big box stores. On the same token, we can get you to 400 grains or 450 grains if you are going to be hunting an antelope. And you need to reach out 60 or 65 yards on the shot. It needs to be very flat. And we can do either one of those. But either one of those still have the same principles of perfect flight characteristics. And in order to do that, you have to have some of the fundamentals down. You need to be in the right spine. You need to have enough veins for what you're trying to shoot. And that's what I think we're trying to bring to the table now. And if you were to call up your local big box store and ask them any of the technical questions that we get asked, they're not going to be able to answer them.
No, and I know exactly what you're talking about with some of the weight things. I've gone in and looking for 200 grain broad or field points, and they're not hanging on the shelf most of the time. So that is, I don't remember who said it, but one of the best things I heard was, you know, we spend thousands of dollars on bows and sights and releases and all this kind of stuff, but none of that actually touches the animal, right? We need to look at investing in and spending the money and getting high quality arrows and broadheads, because that's what actually is going to do the damage. Yes, the big fancy flashy bows that have all these different camo patterns and umpteen million feet per second, but let's be real, that stops at you. The arrow is what gets the animal. So that was one of the reasons I was one of those people that got flustered with it and left. Like I went to the crossbow because I was so upset with the inconsistencies I was getting. Was it some of bow tuning? Perhaps, but like, and that's a major component. Troy talks a lot about that, but the arrows were absolutely a major part of that. So you touched a little bit there on a heavy arrow, light arrow. We've talked about it on this show before. There's some great debate out there on what is the perfect arrow for a certain species, or, you know, why you don't need to have a 650 grain arrow to kill a whitetail and you can do it with a 388 or whatever. And I know people get really passionate about that. We talked a little bit about it earlier, and I think it's like picking the right tool for the job. You just mentioned with, you know, what you're going to use for an antelope versus a hippo. What do you have any thoughts like as far as when you're designing? Most of our listeners are going to be whitetails. What are we looking for on a whitetail arrow?
I personally try to recommend to get around 500 to 600 grains for whitetail. Can you do it with less? You can. If you encounter a heavy shoulder, you're probably going to have difficulties with a 400 grain arrow. So there's a little bit of insurance factor in there. We also will ask people, where are you hunting? Are you a Midwest hunter that has 20 to 30 yard max shot? And you wouldn't believe how many people call in and say, well, the max I've got is 20, maybe. And then we get out west guys that are going to be shooting mule deer, and they may be taking 60 to 70 yard shots. So we'll try to tailor that arrow to maybe closer to 500, 485, 500, 525.
So the lower the grains, or the flatter the projectile, or not less the rainbow type of.
That's correct. It doesn't have as much downrange momentum left when it gets there, just because of the way resistance, and it gets really technical with some of the math, but resistance doubles with speed. So you will have the a little bit less down range, but if you're shooting whitetail and you're a Western hunter and you're planning to shoot 65 yards, you're not going to do that with a 700 grain arrow. You can, but you better have a pretty good shoulder to be able to pull a really, really heavy bow back. So yeah, we try to find out where they're going to be hunting. If you're a 30 yards max guy and you want to shoot a 650 grain arrow, we're also going to encourage that. Great. Go for it. You know, it's, you're not going to see, anything but good results when it hits the arrow. A lot of guys, it's controversial. Well, they might jump the string. They might. But when you do the math and figure out the actual time distance between when a 600 grain arrow versus a 480 grain arrow leaves at 30 yards to get to the target, for most guys shooting a normal, you know, 60 to 70 pound bow, I mean, we're talking fractions of a second. And that can mean the difference of a some distance and how far a deer can drop. But my guess is some other things went wrong before that. They were alert. You shot potentially at a time when they were either staring at you or whatever, and you would have had bad results with a 300 grain arrow. So we do try to tailor it to where are you shooting, how far are you shooting, and we try to get people in that 500 to 600 grain range, because anecdotally, everything that we get back from the field is people saying, I blew right through this shoulder. I had a 550 grain arrow. And Tyler can talk to this. He fields a lot of the technical calls, but our best experiences happen when you get 550 and above with deer.
That's kind of that sweet spot there. Yeah. So
I want to just piggyback off something real quick. When we talked to Dr. Ashby, he talked about practice shooting at moving targets, because as whitetail hunters, we're in a tree, stop them. We alert them to our presence immediately. So, I mean, do you think there's a correlation between stopping that whitetail? I mean, like, we're saying, hey, there's something here that you don't know what it is. So, I mean, so are deer, are they seeing the movement of a hunter releasing an arrow, your bow moves forward or back, whatever it may be? Or are they actually hearing the arrow or hearing the string? Because we've had this conversation before. We've had, you shot at a doe, missed. You had a malfunction of an arrow. She did not move. You shot her again and killed her.
It was a low light situation too. So to me, it was like she would have heard the knock broke, right? There was a noise, but she didn't move. And after all was said and done, that first arrow really ended up 3 inches underneath her belly. Like, she had to have heard something, but she didn't move. So the second one, unless maybe it was the deaf deer of the block, but like the second one I knocked right there, boom, gone. I mean, she was 15 yards. This is so close. So to me, there wasn't jumping a string. It was, if they're jumping strings, it's gotta be something else, whether it's the sound of the arrow coming in or the visual. I don't know if they can pick up some kind of projectile. Yeah, I don't know.
Why do they jump the string? I mean, have you seen any?
Now we're getting off on a tangent, yeah. But this is good.
We've talked about it a lot about animals jumping the string.
There's as many debates about why they jump strings, but I do know that there's a combination of things. There's noise of your bow. When you release that bow, if you've got a really light arrow, instead of all of that energy being pushed through the cams and then out through the string and then through to push that heavier arrow, and I'm not saying heavy, but heavier arrow out, it goes to a lot of vibration. So that energy is transferred into vibrations, noise. And so when you shoot something, like we talked, that hippo arrow, the one that I used for Cape Buffalo last year was 930 grains. You can barely hear that bow shoot. When I shoot for distance during the summertime, I'm shooting 410 grain arrow because I want to practice out to 100, 110. And that thing sounds like a firecracker going off. Same bow. So I think there's a combination of they do see things, they hear things. The one that didn't jump on you may not know where to go. It may have heard something from your bow, then the arrow shoots off in the other direction. So which way is it supposed to move? You know, so you know, it could have been deaf. Yeah. We don't know.
Right.
So. Could have been deaf.
So too many variables.
Right. Too many variables.
So, but I think that what it comes down to is having the right tool for the job, right? And if you're going to shoot a hippo, you got to have the right tool. It's not, you're not like using using an arrow instead of a hammer. If you were out working in the yard, you know, you got to have the right tool for the job and selecting that. So you guys do a pretty good job of helping folks with that. As the day's been going on, we've been talking different things, basic components of an arrow. And if you're not, if you're the type that just walks in for the big box store and gets whatever that, you might not even know what these are. When some of us are like that when we first started. GPI, length, spine, FOC. I want to cover some of those basic terminology, single bevel, some of these different things that are now much more part of the conversation when you're making your arrows. So, you know, when you guys pull out an arrow, and we talked about GPI, let's start there. Grains per inch, right?
Right. I'm gonna let Tyler feel out of these because he does a lot of our technical builds as well. So this is right up his alley.
Okay, Tyler. So like, if I've got a 28 inch draw length and somebody says, "Well, what GPI do you want?" or spine, like, let's. I would, you know, some people might not have any idea what that we're looking at there.
Yeah. So typically, what we see with a customer calling in, kind of, you know, starting from zero, what we're gonna do. Is we're going to get their draw length and their draw weight on their bow is pretty much where we always start. And then from there, we'll try to get an idea, kind of like what Seth was saying, of the total weight that they want to end up at, and more importantly, kind of the total front weight combination that they're looking to shoot between their broadhead and their insert weight. And from there, just kind of using kind of customer feedback as well as kind of results that we've had, as well as our spine charts, that's where we'll kind of go and start with the spine. All of our spines kind of have their own listed GPIs, and due to the carbons and kind of the shafts that we offer, we do have very good GPIs that help increase that higher FOC percentage. But yeah, pretty much spine is going to definitely be most critical on your draw weight, your length, and then the total front weight that you're shooting. So once we kind of know those three variables, that's going to give us our best recommendation for what spine you should be in. And then back to Troy Fowler, the Ranch Fairy, we also offer the Ranch Fairy test kits that gives you two different spines and a multitude of field point front weights to play with if it was something that you were wanting to kind of tinker with yourself and really dial in that that perfect combination for your bow, because every bow system and every shooter is going to be a little bit different in that regard.
So the GPI, though, is it's grains per inch. Grains is a unit of measurement. So the more GPI, the stronger it is, or the...
Not necessarily. The GPI is going to have a lot to do with the diameter of the shaft and then the material used in that shaft. So here we have our micro series, our Orion, which is a 166, and that's going to have a lot lighter GPIs than, say, our Vulcan series, which is our 246, even in the same spine. So a 250 spine Orion is going to have a lot lighter GPI than a 250 spine Vulcan shaft, but they're both going to have that same stiffness of the 250 spine. That's kind of the benefit and kind of contrast that you have there between the diameters, is you're still getting the same stiffness in the spine, but you're getting that lighter GPI on something like a micro shaft, which is going to increase your forward of center and lighten up your overall total arrow weight, all else being equal.
Very good. I think we talked earlier, spine is one of those things that people seem to have wrong more often than not when it comes to arrows they've selected themselves or have been purchased at the box store. That's going to be our stiffness, right, of the arrow. And that can sub- and it's not just a number you guys pull out or say, we've got more of these, so we'll say those. Like, there is a chart, and I mean, there's a whole lot of math involved in your draw weight and length and all that kind of stuff, right?
That's right. So we design all of our arrows to shoot. If you shoot a 250 spine, if that's what you get to shoot well out of your bow, for example, in the Orion, it's going to shoot the same out of the Vulcan, Supernova. Any of those are going to have the same, they're going to shoot the same way. It's not the same if you were to go from one brand to the next. So we design all of our spines when you hit 250. And really, for anybody that doesn't understand, a measurement of spine is measured by setting two rollers at 28 inches apart, and then you hang a weight, which is a pre-calibrated weight, in the center, and however much it bends, that's the spine. So it's 250 thousandths of an inch, or a quarter of an inch is what a 250 spine is. So when people go, oh, what's, I thought the 200 spine would be weaker. The 200 spine is actually stiffer because it doesn't bend as much. So if you get a 500 spine arrow, like on our TradStar, it actually bends a half an inch when you put that weight in the center. So there are companies out there, one in particular, big box store company, that they decided to go off and do their own thing and start naming them in the opposite direction. So it really throws people off when they're just yet another frustration point. It's like, well, I was in this brand and I was shooting a 400. That's great. It's a 250 in ours because we go by the national standard of naming your spine. So there's a lot of that too. So not to make it even more confusing, but then they threw a different type of spine chart out there. And you can't use their spine chart when you come to our arrows. And even in when you get into better carbons like what we're using here at Sirius, you're going to be able to get these lighter GPIs. So we talk about it having a lighter GPI, but why is that? So like on the Orion, the carbon that we use for that is an extremely high-grade carbon. In fact, when we purchase that carbon, it has to be signed off that you're not using it for a foreign government's military.
Wow.
So it's generally only used in aviation. So it is a little unusual to use this carbon for arrows, but it gives you an amazingly strong arrow, but lighter. And thereby we can reduce the overall weight of the arrow. So when Tyler said we're trying to first figure out where do you want to be, we have to factor in that GPI times the number of inches to see if we can even get you in there. Because there's guys that say, you know, I'd like to shoot a 200 grain broadhead and I want 180 grain insert. So, okay, 380 up front, but I want to stay under 550 grains. And we're like, the math doesn't work out. So we can get you close, but we may have to move you around an arrow family. And if you are already used to going through your Ranch Fairy test kit and you found out that the 300 spine worked for you, you just can't jump over into another one, but we can jump over to another arrow family. You can't just go down in spine, which is why people got frustrated. You went to the big box store and they handed you 400 spine arrows and you were shooting a 70-pound bow at 29 inches. And then you were frustrated because your accuracy wasn't there. Well, a lot of the problem with the accuracy wasn't you. It was the fact that you had underspined arrows and they were never going to launch off your rest the same way twice. So that's why we work so hard to figure out where do you need to be. Because once you have that foundation of where you need to be, then the rest of this is a math problem. And that's it.
You know, it was funny when I started looking into this, you know, heavy arrow setup. I went back and I hadn't bow hunted for a couple of years, and I went back and looked at the arrows that I got from one of the big box, and they were 400 spine arrows, 31 inch draw, 74 pounds of draw weight. And so you just say that, I'm like, well, so it wasn't me, is what you're saying. Maybe a little bit.
Maybe. But fair it does enough. Come
thanks
down to
my feelings.
It does come down to bow tuning as well. So if we can get you in the right spine arrow and you're still having difficulties, we have a lot of people, Tyler can tell you, they send pictures into us of their paper tuning. And we can generally look at that paper tune and go, okay, you know, you need to move your rest a little bit this way. If it's more than that, you're going to have to call your bow shop and get them to shim your cams, or you'll see the knock-in going both directions and all around. And like, you're going to have to work on your hand. This is on you for right now. And but we do a lot of that, which you're not going to get from just a normal a lot of bow shops won't even do it. We have guys that call in here and say bow shops won't even paper tune. They don't believe in paper tuning. So and just like there are hunters all over the spectrum, there's bow shops all over the spectrum.
Right. Yeah, and I tried to tune mine last year and it didn't work out very well, so I was one of those guys that needed to get into the shop and have it done right. But FOC, so forward to center, right? That's another major term that we talk about. And what are we saying? Everything over, was it 18-19% is generally considered decent? Where did Dr. Ashby start seeing his differences? Maybe it was 16% FOC, somewhere in there. But what are you guys shooting for, or how do you determine what we're looking at on that?
So kind of back to what Seth was talking, I guess, for this podcast for sure, the whitetail kind of general setup, 60 to 70 pound bow, shooting for, you know, that 500 to 600 grain range. Depending on the arrow series again and your GPI, I would say most builds and again, arrow length is another big factor in FOC because the longer arrow you get, you're pretty much fighting a losing battle with FOC because it's a lot harder and you need a lot more front weight to get a higher FOC percentage. So someone with a 26-inch draw is always going to be ahead of the game of someone with like a 30-inch draw in terms of FOC just because of that.
Little guys win, Paul. You hear that? That's little guys win.
But I would say generally kind of for that whitetail setup, not going too extreme. Most of the setups that we see and that we deal with probably anywhere between that 16 to 20%, I would say, on most of our arrow shafts in that, you know, 500 to 600 grain arrow range. And we've seen great results from that and had a lot of good feedback on kind of that range there. And then, like Seth said, we do, you know, it's specialized. If you were going for a Cape Buffalo or something, I think Seth's Cape Buffalo arrow was almost 30% FOC. So it is going to kind of depend a lot on kind of what you're trying to accomplish with your setup as well as the game you're going after in terms of kind of like what you were talking about with Ed's theories and stuff on that FOC. The game that you're going after does play a big part in that as well.
And we're not going to go for we're not trying to get extreme FOC here. There are those guys that like doing that, and that's fine. We have the stuff to do it with. But we're trying to get a well-balanced arrow, north of 16% FOC if possible. But we have guys that ask us if we can make longer arrows for them, you know, so that some of these guys are shooting these Matthews Atlas bows at 33.5 inches, you know, and for them to try to get to 16% FOC, you'd have to have a whole lot of weight up front. You could do it, but it's going to take so much weight up front. And Dr. Ashby has an awesome video, if anybody can find it online, where he shows taking paper clips, and you take paper clips and he has the arrow bounce and you hang them on the front, and he has to hang so many more on the front than like one on the back, and it throws the whole balance off. And so that's another thing we try to do, is try to figure out, like, when you are building that arrow, we're not, if you're a long draw guy, it might not make sense for you to try to throw a lighted knock on the back plus a big reflective wrap at 10 or 15 grains and then do a four fletch with big heavy arrows, or excuse me, big heavy vanes, because you're just killing your FOC at that point. You are already behind the curve, and now you've made it worse. So if we can take some of that weight and move it forward, maybe even go to like the Orion or a lighter GPI, then we can start moving the needle for you a little bit more. And it does make a big difference. Flight characteristics do change when you get above that 15, 16, 17% mark.
More stable.
More flight, stable.
Right. Okay. So I'm looking at an arrow right here. And so my, I think my draw length is 20.
Should we give him a different arrow for this?
This is fine. we'll all get the same place. So I think my draw length is 28 inches. When we're talking about the length, so as you're going through the website, you know, you've got to just declare your kind of your length and different things like that. 28 inches is from the end of the arrow, not the nock, right? To this insert at the top, or is it where?
So for our website and the way we kind of operate, all of our measurements are done on strict carbon to carbon, just because of differences in nock throats, differences in the type of insert systems you may be using. We just find that having just our universal measurements starting out as your carbon to carbon, which is just strict shaft length, no nock, no insert or anything included in that, gives us the best uniform place to start just because of the differences in nock throats, insert sizes, things like that. So we do strict carbon to carbon, so that's where our measurements come from.
So if I order an arrow, and I'm just trying to pull numbers off my head, 28 inches long, and I want to have it, you know, I'm going to have 200 grain broadhead, and I'd like to have a total of 650. I guess my length is this like 28 and a half total, or is this 28? Is that the carbon? Or where's the insert at in that?
That one probably adds a half an inch.
It adds a half an inch. So this total length is really more than just 28, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so most of the time with our builds, your total, not most of the time, all of the time, your total arrow length from, you know, either all the way to the end of your nock or the throat of your nock, where some companies would measure it, to the end of your insert is pretty much always going to be longer than that carbon to carbon length that you put in. And again, that's going to depend pretty much on the insert system that you choose. So some of our post and sleeve systems from Ethics that we offer for the Orions, that's going to add 7/8 of an inch to your total arrow length. And then, you know, something like one of our standard stainless inserts for a 246, that's only going to add about 1/8 of an inch to your total arrow length. So that's all stuff that we try to factor in when we're building these for people. We try to factor in your sleeve length, covering up, you know, the end of your arrow shaft, make sure people aren't getting any rest contact there. But yeah, we always start on carbon to carbon, and then we can kind of go to the total arrow length from there, depending on the insert system that they choose.
That's good to know. So I think I guessed when I put mine in, trying to figure that all out the first time. That worked. I haven't cut my finger yet, but whatever. So
generally, if you are worried about the length, and the one thing we are protective of, one, because everybody's looking to sue everybody today, but we like to have that broadhead about 1 inch away from your fingers. So if you order on a standard diameter arrow where you're going to just have a traditional insert that adds 1/16 or 1/8 from any box store or any arrow company, just plan on adding about 1 inch to your draw length, and that'll keep that broadhead away from your finger. And then if you're going to order something with the sleeve system, most of them, except on micros, will add about 1/2 inch. So if you add your 1/2 inch to your draw length, so for you, your draw length's
28, I think.
28, so order 28 1/2, and you'll be fine.
Okay.
If it's a little long, you can always take a little bit off of the back. But it's generally better to keep your fingers and lose them.
Don't underestimate me. If you, I'll be out there with my hacksaw trying to take off some of the back, and then next thing you know, I'll have some crazy arrows.
But we also don't want to get them too long.
Right.
Because that hurts your FOC. But it's better to keep fingers and have a stable flight arrow than it is to worry about FOC.
Good. Now, you guys have, we put the inserts in there, right? I was watching you. We showed us earlier how you're going about that. You want to just give us a quick rundown of that process and how you choose the insert. We talked a little bit about your epoxy and that kind of stuff. It's pretty unique. Give us a rundown on that.
Yeah, so depending on which arrow series you select, we have several different component options for that arrow from Ethics Archery. So for our standard diameter arrows, we have two different standard insert options. One is an aluminum insert. That's adjustable between, I believe, 12.5 and 35 grains. We have a stainless insert, and then a couple post and sleeve options. That's going to be the same for our Apollo. We have two different half out options, and then a couple post and sleeve options. And then for the Orion, the Micro, it's all post and sleeves. But with that, you have a couple different metals, a couple different choices of sleeve and post combination. And again, the choosing the components, a lot of times it's just going to come down to if the customer has a front weight or a total weight in mind that they're trying to hit. And because our components are variable weights and can be adjusted, we can kind of work with them there to get that total front weight or total arrow weight number that they're looking to achieve. Or a lot of times, customers will call in and they're not super concerned on a total front weight number. They just want a really durable system. So that's when we'll maybe kind of guide them towards one of our full stainless options or one of our more durable options that with that durability comes extra weight, but because they're not super concerned about that, they want the durability. So that's when we can go with a full system of one of our stainless steel options and get that durability. And then kind of whatever that total weight comes out to is what it'll come out to for them.
So one of the things that we see a lot are guys will try to buy a stainless steel system, sleeve and post, and then they want to cut it down to a nub because they want to get the weight all the way down. And they are adjustable down to that. And we try to steer them into, if you would take the full-length aluminum post with a stainless steel sleeve and get to the same weight, you're far better off than trying to cut that thing down to a nub. And that is one of the things that we try to fight, and we probably need to do a video on it, honestly, just to explain. But the more post you can have inside the arrow, the stronger that front end's going to be. If it's immovable, then it also takes away from, and it gets real technical here, but from the length of the arrow shaft. So if you have a 28-inch draw and you put a 2.5-inch steel post in the inside, you're only going to have, what did I say, 2.5-inch? Mm-hmm. So you would have, 25.5 inches of actual flexible portion of your arrow. So you could potentially shoot a 300 spine, or maybe you were able to go down to a 350 spine, depending on what your draw weight was, because you have an immovable piece in there. And if you have to think that hard about it, pick up the phone and call, because you're liable to screw it up, because it even gets confusing sometimes on the inside for us. So as we're working through that, don't be ashamed to pick up the phone and call.
No, and I'll second that. These guys have been great today working with us, but how many times I've been on the website and I'll start going through and I'm going to design them and I'm this color and that color and this weight and whatever. And then I'm just like, wait, do I want to put the fletchings on? Do I not want to do that? Do I put the inserts? I should just pick up the phone and call, and I can attest that that would be great to steer you down the right direction. So we're sitting in the fletching room. I think that's what this would be considered. There's every color fletching possible and sizes and shapes. And I don't know, what do we got? 6 or 7 Bitsenbergs down there. One of the questions that I struggle with is how many fletchings like to put on my arrow. I mean, I've come personally, I've got the AAE Stealths, I think, but I struggle if I want to go 3, if I want to go 4, if I want to have a helical, if I want them straight. Why do you do one over the other, or what's it matter? Does it matter?
Well, that is a controversial topic. But what I'll tell most folks is, if you're going to be shooting a adult broadhead, you need to have enough fletching for the back to make the front behave. The front's going to want to misbehave, especially on a bigger broadhead. It's catching more wind up front. And you need that little bit of drag on the back in order to keep the arrow flying straight. That's what the vanes are there for. We typically do a 4 fletch for most of our customers, because you can go to a little bit lower profile, lighter vane unless you're shooting. There are some wide cut broadheads out there, and I think they even tell you they're not to be shot past 40 yards because they're hard to control. There's a lot of metal up there catching a lot of wind. So you need enough fletching to make your arrow behave. If you're going to shoot a mechanical that's maybe 100 grain, you probably don't need but 3 fletchings, and it doesn't take a whole lot of steering. If you're going to shoot something that's in that 150, 200 grain range, maybe even bigger, like the meathead at 265 or something like that, you need a little bit more fletching to make it behave. So it's really important that you get you don't want too much, because you don't want there to be so much drag that I've seen some crazy helicals. I mean, stuff where I don't even know how they get them around the arrows the way they do. And then they shoot a mechanical broadhead. It doesn't make any sense. Our standard arrow goes out with about between 2.5 and 3 degree right helical. That seems to work best for most of our customers. It is forgiving. That's the other thing people don't realize, is that helical makes it a little bit more forgiving. It's just like rifling in a rifle barrel. It gets the arrow spinning, and when it's spinning, it's more stable in flight. So that is our standard. We do a straight helical very rarely. It's an option. And then left helical for us is an option as well. Some people prefer to shoot a left helical. But the majority of people, the right helical with the right vanes, you know, it's going to be spinning in the right direction. That's a lot of controversy too. Well, my bear shaft spins left coming off my arrow, or mine spins right, and I want to match them up. And if you want to, that's fine. We can do whatever you want. But even with a 4 fletch within a foot or so of the end of the bow, just through high-speed photography, we've been able to see that they're already spinning right. So if you have a right helical broadhead, you need to match that helical. It's really important that you don't put a left helical on a left helical on a right bevel broadhead. I know I said helical before. It's getting late. But you always want to match those up, because you don't want them fighting each other. One's creating spin in one direction, one's trying to create spin in another. They will fight each other. So since the majority of guys that, at least for us that are now shooting right bevel broadheads, we make that as our standard.
Is it right bevel broadhead pretty standard? I mean, okay, that's your standard in the industry? Or how do you, is it something in the, as you're going through the description of a broadhead when you're buying them that'll say right or left? Yeah. I guess I've never looked.
I think overall, us included, we definitely are predominantly right bevel for our single bevel offerings. And I do think that is, I would say it's definitely more of an industry standard as well. There are companies that do make left bevel heads. We do have left bevels available in some of our tough head line. But overall, I think right bevel is a little bit more common. So like Seth was saying, you just want to be sure that if you are shooting a left bevel broadhead, that is when you would need to do a left helical. But with a right bevel, you'd want to match that with a right helical.
And just for the record, it has nothing to do if you're right-handed or left-handed, right?
No.
Okay.
No. Doesn't make any difference.
That's right. I knew the answer to that question, but I just make sure that was clear out there. So talking about broadheads, Dr. Ashby's stuff, it's the single bevel. It's heavy up front, good quality steel, that kind of stuff. You guys have a few different options. We were looking at them earlier as far as we've got the new, the three-bladed double bevels, right?
Right.
And that's what we were talking about. You get less of that twisting through the animal, but more of that punch, that packing that punch. You want to talk about the difference on those a little bit?
Sure.
Is that what it
is? So we have the three blades available in both 150, 200, and 300 grain. Those are going to just punch straight through the animal. They're not designed to twist. They make for good blood trails, usually right off the bat. They have a nice cutting diameter. There's extra cutting space because you've got three blades instead of two cutting. So there's some advantages there. They're not as good in heavy bone as what you're going to find a single bevel, which is a lot of our offering is in the single bevel. The twisting action of a single bevel actually goes in and snaps bones, pops bones, and then lets the rest of the arrow slide through easier than just trying to punch straight through. And we have single bevels, and we might as well go ahead and say it now. We've got 150 version that'll be announced before this podcast goes out, 200 and 300 in the Evolution line, which is an S7 tool steel, same thing that you'd make a cold chisel out of. And we did some testing a couple weeks ago where we were shooting into the concrete wall back behind our building here, and we actually stuck it in the concrete, chiseled it out. I think that video will go out on YouTube next Monday. And we had to chisel it out and then came in, sharpened it up, did a sharpening video, which is another reason you shouldn't try to do your own videos because 2/3 of it was out of frame and we had to throw it away. But we sharpened the thing up to where it just put it right back in your quiver.
Wow.
But that's S7 tool steel. You know, that's the difference. You would not do that with our classic series. It's a different type of steel. It's we use stainless on the classic series. You can get those in glue-ons or screw-ins. So we still have a lot of traditional hunters that will buy the glue-ons, 190 grain, 220 grain, and then we make the screw-in versions so that you can shoot the same head, but you're going to shoot it out of a screw-in insert. So those we also have in a dangerous game line, which get 400 up to 500 grains, and then we make those to order. So if there's a specialty weight somebody wants, we start with a 300 base, and then we can chemically adhere inserts on the inside to get you up to 500. So that's a mammoth when you're shooting 500.
Let's take down some does real quick.
So there's a lot of acronyms. There's a lot of math. This can be kind of intimidating for a lot of just the average bow hunter in Ohio. And I'm that guy. I've done a lot of research about the heavy arrow setup. I've seen the pros about it. So if I want to kind of switch over from those run of the mill big box arrow setups and broadhead setups, where do I start? What's kind of the simplest path to get to where we're at? If I don't have time to, you know, bear shaft tune and knock tune and paper tune and all these things, where do I start?
The easiest way to start would just to make a phone call to us. And when you call in, drop any pride and say, I don't know what I'm doing, and help me, and we are more than happy to help. We get a lot of guys that call and say, I don't know what I'm doing, and then they say 72 times, but I want to do this, but I want to do this. Well, then do that. That's fine. But what we're going to guide you into is a good, balanced setup, good for you to hunt everything in your area. If you're going to go and hunt moose, call us back. We're going to do a different setup for you. But for most everything else, we'll get you into the arrow that's a good setup for you. And that's probably the easiest way. Ranch Fairy has a lot of good videos. So if you go to YouTube, you can see, I mean, at least they're entertaining. If you don't take anything away from them, they're entertaining.
Yes, and, absolutely.
He's got a lot of good information. We do have a lot of people that don't have a lot of time to get a lot of videos watched. They have young kids. We've got a lot of people with young families, things like that. You got, we're competing against soccer. We're competing against all kinds of stuff. Call us in. Let us build your setup. Send it to you. If you have any issues, we'll help you adjust it from there. That's probably the easiest way.
Yeah. So, what else is on the docket? You guys got anything new, latest and greatest stuff out for the upcoming year?
Yeah, we have. Hopefully, the patent work will be finished up this week on a new 204 system for inserts. It's going to be, we think, probably going to be the next great thing. It's been in the works for a year and a half now. That's going to be pretty awesome. We'll be announcing a new arrow coming out pretty soon. That'll be pretty awesome. It's going to have a lighter GPI, and it's going to be one that guys can throw further downrange. And then by fall, a target line. So
very good.
We're going 23s, 25s, and 27s. So for those guys, and we get a lot of calls, when are you guys going to get target shafts? When are you guys going to... Well, we've been pretty much a hunting company, and Rome wasn't built in a day. But now's the time. We've grown enough now that we have the resources to be able to put into the R&D and things to be able to get that type of line out. So that's coming out.
Great. I almost forgot, but I told myself we were going to talk about crossbow bolts. And you guys also have a line for those, right?
The Phoenix.
Phoenix, okay. One of those birds. I know it's all astronomical stuff, but for me, whatever, it's a bird. The bolts that I had on my crossbow, they just came, right? They came with the bow, or I guess. Building ones with you guys, same type of process as the upright bow or upright arrows?
That's right. You can go right to the website. They are, they have much more limited choices.
Okay.
Mostly because we're not really having to fight with an FOC number. I mean, most of them are cut to 20. Some are cut to 18. We've even seen shorter ones in 16. But we're not, those folks aren't normally concerned about FOC. So the conversation's limited to what color vanes do you want? And then we need to make sure you're shooting the right nock. The nock is really important. There are some crossbows that require, for example, I think it's 10 point that has an omni nock. There's some that have flat knocks. There's some that have half moons. And it's important that you match that up. We have a standard 300 ID shaft. And the reason we did that is because that's what everybody used to make theirs to. And so knocks would be interchangeable. There are some now that are changing. And we're even getting word that some of the crossbow manufacturers are saying you can only shoot this arrow that they came with, or we're going to void your warranty. So we are fighting that a little bit, but they're so much stronger than what comes out with the original crossbow. They are a more expensive bolt, but they're going to last shot after shot after shot, even into the ground.
Just one quick question. I think we'll wrap this up, and really appreciate your guys' time. Why is there so much hate directed towards the heavy arrow setup in the archery, the bow hunting community?
Way to end on a nice, easy question there, Paul.
Yeah.
A lot of the hate comes from the fact that we have anything new, there's resistance to change. Not that this was new. we had guys shooting aluminum arrows, me included when I started, shooting aluminum arrows that were probably 600, 700 grains then. So this isn't new, but it's new because the industry started chasing speed a long time ago. The bows went from shooting 300 to 295, 300 feet per second and lower. All of a sudden, in 10 years, they jumped up to where they're trying to shoot 350 plus.
And some of those crossbows are like 500 plus.
Right? They're experiencing the same thing right now. So we chased that speed. We were looking for faster, lighter arrows, lighter components, anything we do to get that speed up to 350 because it sounds cool. The hatred comes in as there's some polarizing folks in the heavy arrow world that like to go on these forums and just browbeat guys that shoot light arrows. The light arrow guys go in, they browbeat the guys that shoot heavy arrows. Shoot what you want. We know from experience what guys are having good luck with, right? But there's no one right arrow. But a lot of the hate comes in when you say, you have to shoot this. If you're not shooting this, if you're not shooting this, you're not shooting a good arrow. It's unethical. I don't know how many times I've heard that. I've also heard Dr. Ashby misquoted more than any one human, maybe next to Socrates, in the world. Every week I hear somebody call and say, Dr. Ashby says you have to shoot 650 grains or you can't shoot deer. I talk to Dr. Ashby frequently. He's never said that. He doesn't advocate for that. He said that his research showed that when you got 650 and above, penetration increased greatly. That's it. He never said that. You know, and he's shooting Cape Buffalo and things like this for testing. So I think a lot of the controversy comes in because guys jump on one side or the other. Our country's polarized to two different places. So why shouldn't hunting be polarized in two different places? So we'll be heavy and light. And what we're saying is find what works for you. Find that middle ground that gives you good speed and trajectory with also giving you that momentum you need to get through the animal. And that's different on every animal. But I think most of the controversy just comes down to keyboard warriors.
I can't disagree with you on that at all. And I'll tell you what, I just wrote an article for Go Wild. But to me, it's confidence, man. If you're confident in what you are shooting in the woods, that's great. You can have the greatest rifle in the world, but if it's off by 6 inches, I mean, it's not worth anything. And if you go into a hunt knowing it's off, like, you're already, mind is screwed up. So to me, it's being confident. And if you think and you know what you have works, then shoot it, you know. And that's going to, if you're confident and calm in that situation, the shot placement's going to be better and everything the whole way through. So
I think a lot of it comes down to two. We have bow shops out there, and it's hard to make it as a bow shop. Everybody thinks these guys make these huge margins on every bow they sell. And look, they sold 60 bows last year, 120 bows last year. They make a couple $100 on a bow. The margins aren't there. So we don't attract really good bow technicians because they can't afford to pay them. It's not the bow shop owner's fault. But again, chasing speed. And if I can get your arrow and I can get you to shoot a mechanical and I can get that arrow shooting 280 feet per second, that bow doesn't have to be greatly in tune. It can be out of tune. We can move your rest around just enough that we can get you shooting straight because it doesn't really matter. But then as soon as guys screw in a broadhead, they really see that, oh man, this isn't working right. So I think there's a lot of frustration is that we don't have great bow shops. There are some. There's some that have embraced this and they realize it. And we have a lot that just don't. And they have to keep pushing these arrows out faster with mechanicals because they just don't either have time to do it or the people to tune them properly.
Very good. Well, guys, this has been great. To all of our listeners out there, check it out. What's the website?
SiriusArchery.com, and that's SIRIUS.
Got Instagram it. As well.
Instagram,
Facebook, Sirius TV on YouTube, TikTok, and Twitter. We got it all.
Wow.
All of it.
All of it.
Got it. But I'll tell you, you know, there's no secret. It's not cheap. These aren't cheap arrows, but you get what you pay for, right? And if you want that confidence when you get up there in the tree, out in the woods, and that you know what your shooting is going to work and the way you want it to, we watched as Tyler hand spun and glued everything. This is done with care, and it's going to be right. The accuracy to make your mind spin there. So
gentlemen, thanks for your time.
Yes. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Take care.